And Wesha, I was wondering if you could pick up on that. What are the trends that you observe in regards to the academic literature on the history of partition? And what do you think of as being the scope of history that needs to be taught in order for students to be able to contextualize partition?
Right. So, you know, firstly, and thank you, Catherine, for pointing out how teaching has been changing. And, you know, it has also changed the way research is done on partition and about partition and how partition is understood by historians and researchers alike. And that has a lot to do with the kind or the scope of history that needs to be taught. So I'm going to try and answer how the research of partition has changed, which is then going to directly link up with what is the scope of history that has to be taught before we begin to, you know, justify learning about Indian partition. So, you know, earlier, the focus was very much on state-centric histories, on the blame game, on who wanted partition. Was it the Congress? Was it the Muslim League? Often, you know, completely overshadowing the role that Britain had or the British Empire had with relation to partition. And now historians over the last couple of decades, a bit more than that, historians have become acutely aware of these limitations posed by this very tunnel vision, state-centric histories, and the colonialist bias, you know, that binaries that often has created binaries between so-called rational English people vis-a-vis brown diasporic communities. And this shift was pioneered originally by a very famous work by Urvashi Bhutalia, who wrote The Other Side of Silence, and then the Subaltern Studies Collective, which insisted that there has to be a focus away from these state-centric histories about the blame game, about who wanted partition, to looking at more pertinent themes and issues, such as who was affected by partition and how, and what impact did partition and the sheer scale of violence have on women, not just in short term, but also in long term as well. And how was the violence and the remembrance of violence, particularly how that shaped gender relations in India and Pakistan and also in Bangladesh? So there has also been a shift in narrative about how to look at partition, not just as an event that, you know, happened and got over in 1947, but something as a process that keeps having political and social ramifications even today. And I think this is extremely important to understanding the scope of history that needs to be addressed in schools if we are trying to do justice to the study of partition. There needs to be an acknowledgement of the fact that there is no singular history of partition. You know, the history or histories of partition has a very significant emotive aspect, which is what makes the study so fascinating, so controversial, and so varied, if I may put it that way. And there's no singular history of partition. There are histories all different from one another. And I also mentioned that, you know, partition has to be looked at as a process and not as an event that ended in 1947. And the acknowledgement of these two points is crucial to understanding the scope of history that has to be studied even before we begin to address partition. Now, to put it very simply, there has to be a lot that has to be taught and learned about colonialism and the history of India under colonial rule and situate partition within this broader framework. And, you know, partition didn't happen overnight. The violence did not happen simply because of 1947. And there needs wider engagement with pertinent historical questions like the impact of colonialism, the epistemic violence that colonialism generated, questions regarding nations, nation state, multiple nationalisms, to name only a few. Only when partition is situated within this broader framework can we truly begin to understand it and do justice to the study of it.
Yeah, completely agree with the points that Anwesha has made. I think it's really important not to, with the 75th anniversary approaching, think, right, we've got to chuck something out of year nine and put partition in without having thought about how pupils engage with Indian history over the course of Key Stage 3. For me, that's really essential. There has been some really good work that has been done by David Hibbert and Zeba Patel on this. And when they were thinking about how to teach partition, they used Yasmin Khan's work and taught it as a consequence of World War II, but didn't just put it into their year nine. They thought about what knowledge pupils needed to know about India, so its social makeup, its religious makeup, its cultural makeup, to actually be able to put partition into context. So that, first of all, is really important. And I think the other thing that Anwesha said, and this was really echoed by the reading that I've done from historians, is that partition itself may end in August 1947, but the story of partition certainly doesn't end there. I read an article recently and it spoke about some of the things that Anwesha talked about with regards to textbooks that are used in India. And it said that some of the older textbooks will stop in August 1947. So I think it's really important to look at the aftermath and legacy of partition if we are to do the teaching of it justice. And then equally, as Anwesha was saying, you can't really package partition into neat boxes. So some historians, like Amrita Shodan, she calls against teaching partition through a causal analysis because of that reason. And because if you do try to give a clear and simple explanation for partition, you're going to generalize too much. So I think when we're teaching it in the classroom, it's really important to think about the lens through which we frame our teaching of partition.